Ms. Perez, do you have any witnesses?
Yes, I call Marcus Pito, GDOE Supply Management Administrator.
Please let me raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony that you're about to give will give the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
State your name for the record.
Marcus Pito.
Mr. Pito, could you explain what position you hold at the Guam Department of Education, please?
My position is Supply Management Administrator.
And practically speaking, what does that mean?
I'm the Procurement Manager.
Okay. Were you the Procurement Manager at the time that GDOE IFB 014-2012 was issued?
Yes, I was.
Do you believe you have an understanding of what occurred during the process from bid issuance to bid award?
Yes, I do.
Are you familiar generally with what the intent of IFB 014-2012 is?
Yes, I am.
What did the department intend to do by issuing that IFB?
The department intended to procure laptops and other computer components for the schools, teacher more specifically. The majority of the bid was teacher laptops and student laptops.
Okay. Are you familiar with line item 4 of the bid form that was included in IFB 14?
Yes, I am.
Was that for non-warranty service?
That's what it was labeled, yes.
Okay. What was it that GDOE was trying to purchase with that line item?
For accidental spills and drops, is looking for what it would cost per laptop to repair those.
You said per laptop, is that correct?
That's correct. That's I believe that's in parentheses on line item 4.
That is also correct. When GDOE intended to purchase this coverage, this extra coverage, this non-warranty coverage per laptop, did they want to buy it on an as-needed basis?
No, they want to buy it on a per laptop basis. Yes.
So the per laptop basis, was GDOE prepared to pay the price per laptop for having that kind of coverage over each laptop in the bid?
Yes.
Do you think, was it an error that the total number of teacher and student laptops was not included under the quantity column in the bid form?
In hindsight, yes.
Are you familiar with the bid status that was issued for this IFB?
Yes.
And can you explain what it is that GDOE did in the bid status in determining the award?
Two of the three bidders, namely Soft Choice and Comp Pacific, listed a per laptop price offer for the non-warranty service.
Okay. And did PDS give a price in its bid form that could be construed as a per laptop price?
No, I don't see how it could have been construed that way.
Okay. Were corrections made to the two bidders, that would be Soft Choice and Comp Pacific, indicating why GDOE would take the unit price and correct the bid form based on the unit price given?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Let me perhaps a little easier if I can see you. This is, apologize, GDOE 8 stamp number 00580. It's in everybody's binders. This is the notice of bid status and intent to award letter dated September 20th, 2012 from GDOE. Is that correct, Mr. Pio?
That's correct.
Could you please read the paragraph starting with the IFB bid form requires?
The AFB bid form requires both an individual unit and a lump sum price for non-warranty services for laptops. See item 4 on the bid form. Both CompuCivic and SoftChoice failed to extend the unit price to the number of units to produce the lump sum price for this category. Pursuant to 2 GAR Division 4, Section 3109, M4C, GDOE has construed this failure as a mistake where the intended correct bid is evident and has corrected the lump sum price for each bid by taking the total number of laptops, the sum of the quantities for item 1, teacher laptops, and item 2, student laptops, and multiplying that number by the unit price for non-warranty service. The bids for CompuCivic and SoftChoice are corrected as follows.
Okay. And are the attachments to that letter the bid forms that contain the corrected bid amounts based on the formula that you just described?
That's correct.
Okay. Was in that bid status, was notification given that PDS's bid was deemed non-responsive?
That's correct.
Could you read from the bid, the section that indicates that determination?
On the page, bid stamp GDOE 00581, with regard to Pacific Data Systems, the bid form was submitted with alterations. Specifically, the submitted bid form created subcategories under item 4. Pursuant to section 2.2.5 of the IFB, bids should be submitted in accordance with the attached bid form. GDOE has determined that alteration of the bid form constitutes a failure to comply with the instructions of the bid, and the bid from Pacific Data Systems has been determined to be non-responsive and disqualified from consideration.
Mr. Pito, in the administration of IFBs generally by the department, is there an opportunity given to prospective bidders to pose questions to the department about the content of the IFB?
Yes, sir.
Was there an opportunity for prospective bidders to pose such questions for this IFB?
Yes, there was.
Were there any questions to your knowledge about whether or not a bidder may alter a bid form in contravention of the instructions in section 2.2.5?
To my knowledge, there wasn't any questions about the ability of a bidder to alter a bid form.
Mr. Pito, was your determination, I'm sorry, that letter is signed by you, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Was your determination to disqualify PDS made on a whim?
No, it wasn't.
Did you take some time to consider the bid forms that were submitted?
Yes, we did.
Okay. And in addition to the fact that it was in contravention of the instruction in 2.2.5, was part of the decision also to consider their bid whether or not you could take any sort of unit price from their bid and multiply it in the manner that you did for the other two bidders?
We tried to see if we could, but the additional subcategories added were conditional, and so we had no idea when those conditions would arise.
I'm going to ask you, I'm providing him, I did not put this in with my exhibits, but it's the regulation from the Guam Administrative Regulations, which is mirrored in the DOE Procurement Regulations. And this is a reference to 2 GAR 3109 M42C. Could you read the title of the section, please?
The title of the section is Mistakes Discovered After Opening But Before Award.
And under C, could you read that portion, please?
Under C, it states, mistakes where intended correct bid is evident. If the mistake and the intended correct bid is clearly evident on the face of the bid document, the bid shall be corrected to the intended correct bid and may not be withdrawn.
Continue, please.
Examples of mistakes that may be clearly evident on the face of the bid document are typographical errors, errors in extending unit prices, transportation errors, and arithmetical errors.
Do you rely on these regulations, in addition to perhaps the GDOE regulations, in determining your actions as a procurement administrator?
Absolutely.
Does this clearly state that a typical example of a simple correction to make on a bid is a failure to extend unit prices?
That's correct.
I'm going to ask you one more time. Was there any way, based on the bid submitted by PDS, that you could have simply extended the unit price to allow them to come to the price in the same manner that you did to the other two bidders?
There is no way.
Thank you. No further questions right now.
Yes, question. If now you're saying that the bid form can't be altered, so if you look at the original bid form and note there is no quantity under line four, is that correct?
That's correct.
And so if one of the bidders would have written in a quantity there, that would have been an alteration of the bid form, would it not?
There was a blank space, which we, in hindsight, we probably should have added line one and line two to put in that blank space.
But it wasn't. And so if a bidder had done that, that would be an alteration of the bid form.
There's a mistake after the opening.
When was the opening?
The bid opening, I believe, was August 15th.
And your letter here of the bid status is dated, that was September 20th, right?
That's correct.
So it was almost 5 weeks that passed between bid opening and the determination of the bid status. Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay, now during that 5 weeks, is it fair for me to assume that there were a lot of discussions about how to deal with the issue of the item four being blank under quantity? Is that true?
It may have occupied some of our time. As you know, this is toward the end of the fiscal year. We're coming up to the obligation deadline. This is not the only bid that we're working on.
No, I'm sure that there were other things you were
sure.
doing. But if there is no quantity stated under item four, then you really can't have an extended price, can you? Because there's no quantity to extend whatever price per unit, if that's what you wanted. And if there is no extended price, then it cannot be part of the total bid price. Isn't that true?
I'm sorry, your question?
Okay, the first part is, if you look at your bid form here, I mean, you have quantity. Number one, 1,708 teacher laptops, price per unit. The bidder needs to fill in that price per unit, right?
That's correct.
And then the extended price is just a multiplication.
That's correct.
Okay, and it's the same for all of these items in here except for number nine, which is deployment. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So if an item four, if wouldn't you agree, it's conspicuous that no quantity is stated in item four. All the other lines except for deployment have a quantity stated. And so we know isn't that true?
I agree that we left out the quantity, yeah.
Okay, but were you then concerned once after bid opening and you realized that a bidder may well read the IFB to literally provide a non-warranty service plan, you know, a plan, as opposed to just one figure for everything? Was that a concern?
No.
You weren't concerned about that a bidder may, in a good faith effort to actually comply with the requirements of the IFB, present a plan?
On the bid form, on line item four, it asks for a bid price per laptop.
Okay, but if you don't have a quantity, then unless you do what DOE did, which was to fill in a number and then multiply that by the figure to get the extended price. Well, let me ask the question this way. None of the three bidders put anything in the third column for extended price, did they?
That's correct.
Okay. So none of the three bidders were thinking in terms of apparently this affecting the overall bid price. They all had a bottom line figure on their original bid form. Isn't that true?
That's correct.
And if you just look at those original figures, PDS was a low bidder. Isn't that true?
Based on those figures.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
I mean, you have three bids. They were turned in. We can look at them and see what the low price was prior to the DOE alterations.
That's correct.
So if we're talking about alterations of the bid form, wouldn't you agree that, I mean, with DOE made a major alteration to the bid form, which increased, for example, SoftShare's bid by $233,000.
We made a determination that there was a mistake.
A mistake on SoftChoice's part or DOE's part?
We should have added the quantity of laptops.
So it
but
was,
it did ask a bid price per laptop.
But your letter here of September 20 states that it was the error of the bidders not to extend the quantities, and therefore you were allowed under the regulations to do that.
Yes.
But it wasn't the error of the bidders, was it?
Well, in hindsight, we probably should have added, put the state of the quantity in that first column.
But wouldn't you agree that if there's no quantity there, it's perfectly reasonable for a bidder to think, okay, there's no quantity, therefore that's not going to impact the overall bid price?
We did ask for bid price per laptop.
Yes. But you also asked for an extended warranty service plan. Isn't that true? I'm sorry. You asked for a non-warranty service plan. That's what the IFB requests. Is that right?
Right. We asked the bidders to price it per laptop.
Are you aware of what you got from SoftChoice?
Our IT department made that determination.
Do you think you got from SoftChoice a non-warranty service plan?
Based on the information that I received from our IT department, they felt that the SoftChoice plan was compliant.
Were they aware that SoftChoice was not making any warranty itself? It was merely passing on Lenovo manufacturers' accident protection insurance warranty or whatever. In other words, SoftChoice says, we don't stand behind this warranty. If you have a problem, talk to Lenovo. So your bidder is not.
So whatever the vendor relationship is with manufacturer, that's the relationship. We ask for a certain offering in the bid, and according to the IT department, they're compliant with that request.
Okay. So when you say the IT department, are you aware of five memos, all dated August 21, 2012, from your IT department, your data processing manager?
I'm aware of that, yes.
Yeah, that's, okay, that's the Bates numbers is GDOE 685. And continuing on to, we have five letters here. And that would be Vincent Dela Cruz.
That's correct. He's a data processing manager.
And ending at page number 698. Are you aware, for example, that Mr. Vincent Dela Cruz recommended in at least one of these letters that the Comm Pacific bid be rejected as non-responsive?
I know that he had several versions. I don't know if they were drafts. Apparently they were drafts. But he didn't list draft on these letters. So I take them as his product.
Nowhere in here did he recommend that the PDS bid be rejected as non-compliant, did he?
I'm not aware.
Okay. So he recommends the Comm Pacific bid would be rejected in at least one of these letters, but not the PDS bid. But what happened was the PDS bid was rejected as, I'm sorry, non-responsive but not the composite. Do you know how that came to be?
He did. I know that we asked for a bid form to be completed. However, Mr. Dela Cruz evaluates the technical aspects of what he's requesting. That's his decision. Based on the procurement of these computer systems, we determined that the bid form was altered. And there are some mistakes that were evident on the face of the bid form, which is the extension of prices. And we made those corrections. As evident, these mistakes were made.
Did anyone you had bid opening. Back in August 15. Was there any communication with the bidders after that to try to get clarification?
Not to my knowledge.
Are you aware that in these five draft letters, or whatever they are, Mr. Dela Cruz did recommend communications with bidders for clarification purposes?
Yes, apparently he did recommend seeking clarification.
Was there a concern that when you take the figure supplied by, for example, Compacific, and then you insert another figure, alter the bid form by inserting a figure after bid opening, you end up with a $233,000 figure for non-warranty service?
Yes.
That was a concern.
That's what we came up with.
Well, that's what you came up with, but was that a concern that figure is very
high? I think it's comparable to an insurance policy.
Okay. Did you then compare that to, did you make any determination of even roughly how many of these computers would actually end up needing a non-warranty repair?
It was a per laptop price that we asked for.
Yeah,
and we're willing to compare it across the board per laptop. That's what we asked for.
Doesn't the absence of any quantity stated in there, when all the other items do have quantities, tell a bidder that, okay, whatever plan is proposed is not going to result in a change in the bottom line? It's not going to be used to determine the low bidder because no quantity is stated. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat your question?
If you're a bidder and you look at this and there's no quantity stated, then don't you feel comfortable in proposing a plan, but also at the same time knowing whatever plan you propose is not going to, cannot be used to calculate the low bidder because there's no extended price. It's not possible.
Yeah, I agree that in hindsight, we probably should have put this number in at the beginning. We do ask for a bid price per laptop. I do know that we wouldn't know how to calculate the lump sum bid price based on conditional prices.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't know what to cut the purchase order for.
When you're increasing the amount of the bid, are you concerned then that the bid bonds are inadequate?
It's possible, yeah.
Well, there probably is, isn't it? Because you add a lot, $233,000 onto a bid. Did you then follow up to see if the bid bond was, after doing that, inadequate?
We haven't followed it up.
You haven't done that?
No.
Are you aware that, for example, SoftChoice claims that it owns 100% of itself on its major stockholder declaration?
That's what I understand.
Well, you consider that to be compliant with the requirements when the corporation claims that it owns 100% of itself?
I don't have an answer for that.
Are you aware that in the Compacific bid there was no description whatsoever of what they were providing for the, I believe, $84 they quoted?
I'm sorry?
In the composite bid, there is no reference at all to what was being provided under the non-warranty repair.
I believe in the bid document, the description asked for accidental spills and drops and surges.
But there was no response to that from Town Pacific.
Response meaning?
To what they would do. You asked for more than that. You referred to, at a minimum, spills, surges, and drops at a minimum. But it's at a minimum. And inviting, therefore, the bidder to, add on more things.
Yeah.
Are you aware that there was, in the composite bid, no description of what was being provided at all?
A technical determination was made by our IT department.
Well, okay. Do you know what that technical determination was?
In Mr. De La Cruz's letter.
If a bidder doesn't respond to an item, how can you technically determine that it's adequate or inadequate when there's nothing to read?
I would imagine that would be a question for Mr. De La Cruz.
What I'm getting at is we have 5 weeks to review these bids, and then finally there's these determinations. There's specific references from the tech person that the composite bid should be disqualified. No reference to the PDS bid being disqualified, but then that's what happens. Okay, at the end of the day, and it happens when, and I'm just trying to get an understanding of the process that actually happened, and whether there was any sort of a serious evaluation of these bids beyond the tech person.
Based on the procurement aspects of the bid form, we couldn't find a way to determine how we're going to extend the PDS offering of non-warranty service to a per laptop price, or we would have done it.
Well, did you consider you're not going to extend it at all because there's no quantity stated, therefore it's not going to affect the amount of the bid. And all you have to do is look at the bids as submitted, and PDS is a little better, and so that's the end of the debate. Did you consider doing that?
We considered that in hindsight, we left the quantity off. Because we asked for a bid price per laptop.
I have nothing further.
Rebecca.
No follow-up at this time.
Yes, I do. Going back, Mr. Pito, and I guess it would be Exhibit 12, starting with State Stamp 685, all the way through to 97. I'll start with Comp Pacific, okay. What I found very confusing is there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different letters from Vincent De La Cruz. And who is Vincent De La Cruz again?
He's a data processing manager.
Okay. Were you aware that there were 5 different letters from him?
Until recently.
And they're all dated August 21st. Okay. But each one is slightly different from the other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In two of the versions, the first version starting with 686 on Composific, he says, therefore, is deemed responsive. Composific is found to be responsive. Then in 691, the second version of the letter, okay, and I don't know, they're all dated the same, they're not, so I don't know, I'm just going by bait stamp, all right? Due to the lack of proof during submission of the bid, this is again on Composific, is deemed unresponsive. Okay. So one responsive, one unresponsive. Then 693, deemed unresponsive. That's third version. So now we've got 2 unresponsive, 1 responsive. Okay. And then on the fourth version, therefore it's deemed responsive and Composific with a lot of cross out. And then on the fifth version, is deemed unresponsive. So out of five, three out of the five deem them unresponsive, and two out of the five deemed him responsive. So based on that, are they responsive or unresponsive?
I would imagine what his last version was is what would be his technical evaluation.
They're all dated the same. The only reason it's in line is because of your base stamp. So if I take the last version based on the date stamp, it says he's unresponsive.
I don't know how these versions came to be.
Did you see all five versions at the time you made your...
No.
Did you see these at all?
No. Until recently, I haven't seen all five of them.
When is until recently?
When we made the determination of the final determination. He may have had discussions with someone internal to his department, and these are versions. I don't know how these came about.
But, Mr. Peter, we're talking a very large purchase. Yeah, and you wouldn't want to take the time to clarify on such a very large purchase?
These are his work product. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but did you see any version at all?
I saw the version that came to me to make a determination.
Which version was that, Mr. Pito?
The one that's on the last version.
Okay, so can I assume that it's 696 and 697?
That's correct.
I'm sorry, the GDOE bait stamps are not based on the chronological. We don't know that those are based on the chronological time of submission.
Well, that's the question I'm asking you. I don't know which version.
If I may, Madam Monitor, I guess one question, Mr. Pito, is this. When you made the determination to issue the bid status, had you received a technical evaluation at the time of the issuance of the bid status from Mr. De La Cruz?
Yes.
What was his recommendation at the time, whatever came before then, what was the final recommendation by Mr. De La Cruz with regard to Compacific and their responsiveness on technical evaluations? Because I agree with you, the dates are completely, they're all dated the same.
That's
they
right.
are.
And I have no idea.
And
we didn't bait stamp
them according to the chronological time of submission. So, Mr. Pito, my question is, had you received a recommendation on the technical conformity at the time you wrote the bid submission?
Yes.
What was the recommendation from Mr. De La Cruz?
His recommendation was, as it appears on the bid steps, that the bid should be awarded to Soft Choice.
When you wrote that bid status, was there consultation with the IT department?
Yes, based on their technical evaluation.
So did IT weigh in on whether or not Soft Choice and Compacific were compliant?
Yes, they did.
And did you take that and make it part of your bid status?
Yes, we did.
And so the determination from IT was with regard to Soft Choice and Compacific, what was their determination at the time you issued the bid status with regard to technical compliance?
That with regard to Compacific,
that they
were compliant.
Okay. Madam Auditor, may I continue on just one question? Thank you. To your knowledge, was any bidder deemed technically non-compliant at the time that you wrote that bid status? On the technical specifications, not on the procurement side.
Non-compliant?
On the computer specification side.
No.
So all three of them, to your knowledge, were deemed compliant
Correct.
On the computer specification side?
Correct.
Okay, and the only reason why PDS got DQ'd, disqualifying this, is because you made a determination on the procurement compliance?
That's correct.
I don't know if that clears that up for you at all. I think my point of asking him that question, Madam Auditor, was to show that at the time that he wrote this, that the recommendation was...
What I would like to have then for the record is which version that he used to determine that it was compliant. Which version of the five?
Can I hand him the bait stamp 685 through 698?
Yes.
Okay.
And which version did he determine was the version he used to evaluate?
6.
Yeah, so that starts at 6.85.
Because in three of the versions...
To Compacific, right?
Yeah. Three of the versions, Compacific is deemed unresponsive, and in two of the versions, they're deemed responsive.
Yes.
So I don't know if I had to just base on majority, three out of two, three said he's un. And so which version?
So we'd like to assume that they all weren't written at the same time. I'd have to assume that they weren't written at the exact same time.
So on GDOE bait stamp 00685, all three bidders met the technical specifications.
So we'll go with the first 685.
It does state that Soft Choice and Compacific did not extend their bid price for item four.
So we'll use 685 and 686?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Since you're looking at 686, let's now go to Soft Choice. Mm-hmm. On page 686 above, he says, more clarification is needed for a better understanding of the standard warranty versus the non-warranty service. Aside from the verb, then it goes on to list the questions. Mm-hmm. Was that clarification sought?
No, it was not.
So based on the explanation that Mr. Day provided as to, in his Exhibit 7, which was Soft Choice, where he says that, points out that buying an accidental damage protection. Based on that explanation that we just heard this afternoon, was that generally what you were looking for?
An insurance policy?
Yes.
Yes.
You were looking for an insurance policy?
From my understanding, yes. And from my knowledge of buying a home computer, and I won't speak for the IT department, but ages ago I bought a Gateway computer, and I bought an accidental warranty, I suppose that's what mm-hmm. they call it, an extended warranty.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because I had school-age kids, and I know what can happen. This is what we were looking for, from my understanding from the IT department. We don't have a large IT department that can service all of these with accidents in the schools. Mm-hmm. So while, yes, it may be expensive, it's beyond our means to service these with our in-house IT department, and that's what we were looking for.
So the additional thing that they covered, the supplement to his Exhibit 7, where he goes on to talk about not covered normal wear and tear, batteries, light bulbs, memory disks, wire connections, adapters, etc. Were you aware of that portion of it, of the coverage plan?
I was aware of it, but again, going back to the bid form,
yeah.
I couldn't extend a price based on the conditions that PDS had provided.
No. We're not talking PDS. This is Soft Choice.
Oh.
This is Soft Choice.
I'm sorry.
This is soft choice terms with Lenovo, terms and conditions, okay. This was the exhibit 7. Maybe if you could provide him exhibit 7.
It's exhibit 7 as it was handed to us by two pages worth by counsel for Mr. Mann. But I'm also going to refer to it by the GDOE Bates number, which is GDOE 00274. As a single page, and then GDOE 00342
and
continuing 352.
And it's actually on page 343. It's on, if you were to look at base stamp 343, not covered, normal wear and tear, batteries, light bulbs, memory disks, etc. Is that your general understanding of what's not covered in, like, using your own personal experience of buying the extended warranty?
That's correct.
Okay, so you were generally satisfied with that.
With an insurance policy.
I heard you say at the beginning, and I hope I wrote it down correct. You said at the start, you were looking for a flat price per laptop for non-warranty service.
That's correct.
Okay, so when you saw the extension that was provided, or when you, not the extension, the price on number 4 by CompuServe as well as
CompuPacific.
CompuPacific and Soft Choice,
yes.
That's what you viewed to be as the flat price.
That's correct.
Okay, and I heard you say earlier that it was your intention that it be on a per laptop base, because the form does say per laptop.
That's correct.
Okay. I guess where I see the confusion was when, and it goes back to Exhibit 3 or Bait Stamp 226, the confusion from PDS's side was when they asked more clarification, you did not state you were looking for insurance coverage. Okay, instead, you stated UD is seeking non-warranty service that included labor and parts coverage. At a minimum, the coverage will include, but not, you know, you just pardon the expression, you just regurgitated what you said earlier. Mm-hmm. You didn't really add clarification.
Right.
Yeah. You didn't say that you wanted a per for each of the laptops.
But it said that on the fifth form.
Yeah. But in answering the question, you didn't. So when did you know you wanted to have it per laptop? When did you know that?
When we issued the bid.
When you issued the bid, that was your intent?
I believe that's what line item 4 states, that we bid price per laptop.
But it's just that due to some errors, you didn't put a quantity and you didn't spell out in the bid that to give a price per computer.
Well, it does
per laptop.
It does state per laptop on the bid form. If we did not, in hindsight, yes, we should have put in the quantity for laptops.
But just to recap, based on in having that, and from your own personal experience, I guess it's you took it to mean that each bidder should provide extended insurance instead of warranty, or
perhaps,
protection,
perhaps,
or
but I think
in hindsight, how would you have better worded that? In hindsight,
I just know again from my personal experience with Gateway, but you know.
In hindsight, how would you have reworded this to avoid all of this confusion?
I perhaps would have looked at various websites and seen how they worded their extended warranty language. If there is an industry standard, then that's perhaps what we should have done. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
This is the bid specifications were put up by the IT department.
But again, just to you were looking for extended warranty vis-a-vis extended insurance?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, that clarifies that. Thank you very much. That's all the questions I have.
I have a question.
Yes.
Mr. Day made the point that the non-warranty service for laptops that was being sought under the IFP would not have been covered under the response by Soft Choice in its coverage exclusions. Do you agree or disagree with that, and why?
I don't have an opinion to that. I think what the technical evaluation provided by our IT department is what I base my procurement decision on.
And that's the evaluations are contained in those pages, the 685 to
That's correct.
Approximately 690.
95, I think.
From Mr. Delacruz.
97.
Yeah.
Do you have anything further to add regarding that point?
No, I don't.
I don't have anything more.
Anybody? Is GDOE.
Yes,
Bill?
I do. I have a few questions. If we look at, you haven't had in front of you the actual IFB requirement number L, non-warranty service for laptops?
Is that one of your exhibits?
Exhibit 4.
I'd be happy to provide him our copy of
Exhibit 4.
This is, I'm providing him a copy of what was given to us by Mr. Mann, the two-page exhibit 16 and 17 of 19 was marked as Exhibit 4. A 4 PDS, right.
Is that the one that has date stamps 171 and 172?
If that's not a GDOE product.
That's not. Okay.
Does what you have show, is it headed non-warranty service for laptops?
L?
Yes.
Yes.
That's what I want.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay. It starts out by saying GDOE is requesting for non-warranty services to protect your equipment. Equipment, what does that refer to?
Laptops?
It says for laptops, so it must be in a laptop.
Mr. Mann, are you reading from an IFB document?
Yeah.
No, that's from our response.
I don't believe that's an IFB. I was going to object, but I'll allow Mr. Mann to correct. I think he's asking Mr. Pito to determine what was meant by something that was issued by PDS. That is
No. This is, I'm reading from Part L of the IFB.
What number, what page number in the IFB? Just so we can clarify for the witnesses.
Page 15 and 16
down at the bottom of the IFB.
Look at your page. Is it page, does it say page
15
or
16? Page 16 or 19. This is just PDS response. I'm just using
page 52.
Just using this for convenience.
Right. She's objecting because you're not using the IFB form that is at issue in this case, that you're using the PDS.
That is correct. We'll be happy to provide the.
But it's the same form. This is your bid. This is your bid.
But he's not reading from our bid. He's reading from a PDS prepared document.
He's using this. This is not.
Oh,
that's what I'm saying. So I'm not sure that. I mean, I don't want to line by line validate.
Yeah,
I'd rather just give him the IFB.
Okay.
Is that fair?
I see what you mean.
So could I get the IFB page number?
That's what we're looking for.
You did say L. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's L.
I'm going to approach them to determine whether or not it's this.
15171. Yeah, no.
Okay. What I'm providing to Mr. Pito is date stamp GDOE 00529. It's page 15 of the IFB itself.
What page?
15.
Yeah, and that's what I have, 15 and 16.
I didn't want to formally object. I just wanted a chance to clarify.
So I have two, page 15 and 16 of the IFB, right?
Okay, I'm looking at subpart L there. Do you see that?
Yes.
First sentence, it refers to the equipment.
Yeah.
And the equipment, you presume, is the laptops?
That's correct.
And that would mean all of the laptops.
Sure.
So if a warranty didn't cover all components that are part of the laptop, that would not be compliant with this IFB, would it?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that question?
If the accidental protection, I'm sorry, if what is submitted in response to this requirement is supposed to cover the laptops. Now, isn't that correct? When it says equipment, you're talking about the laptops.
That's what item 4.
Okay. Were you here when Mr. Day testified and pointed out all the parts of the laptops that were not going to be covered under the accidental protection warranty, accidental protection plan or insurance policy provided by SoftChoice?
Your question.
Did you hear that testimony?
Yes, I heard that.
Okay. Now, do you have any position on that one way or the other?
No.
I'm sorry, no?
No.
Okay. Now, and you see it also says, protect the equipment from any events or damage not covered in a standard warranty, right? And yes. Then you talk about the minimum, okay? Mm-hmm. From any events, you'd agree that that invites the bidder to go beyond the minimum. Isn't that true?
Yes, we ask for an insurance policy.
Yeah.
Basically.
Okay, the insurance policy. Okay. But the term, the next paragraph, please provide the overall non-warranty service plan for the laptops in the proposal. How is a bidder supposed to translate that into an accident insurance policy? Is there any, I mean, you're saying you want an accident insurance policy, but how can you compute that to this language here? This is a overall non-warranty service plan.
On a per laptop basis?
Yeah, on a per laptop, oh no, for the laptops in the proposal.
Right, but okay. Line item 4 asks for a bid price per laptop.
Okay, well, you're referring now to an accident protection, an accident insurance plan.
That was the intention.
That was the intent, but it's not even close to what it's stated here, is it?
And on the bid form, we ask for a bid price on line item 4 per laptop. Yeah,
but this is, this is the non-warranty part of the bid form, but this is what the IFB says. And so somehow the bidder is going to have to come up with a non-warranty service plan, the plan, not an insurance policy, a plan. How are repairs that are necessary because of items not covered by the standard warranty going to be repaired? And so you come up with a plan. Depends on what is necessary, such as PVS. I mean, this is not an accident. You're not asking for an accident protection policy here. Wouldn't you agree that this language does not ask for an accident protection policy?
We weren't asking for the bidder to provide something for GDOE to figure out on its own on a per laptop basis. We're asking for a bid price for line item 4 on a per laptop basis. Hindsight, yes, we should have included the total number of laptops being asked to cover in that first column. But I believe line item 4 very clearly asks for a bid price per laptop basis.
With no quantity, but we've already been through that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So do the parties wish to make closing remarks?
Ours, I expect ours to be fairly brief. I can't imagine it would take any longer than
we're gonna limit you guys to 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So I'm fine with doing closings now.
Yes.
Okay, so let's do them now.
May I be excused from the witness?
Please.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much.
May I approach to retrieve my exhibits?
Yes.
Vince and Jared, if you could monitor the time and advise the speaker when 5 minutes has expired. Mr. Mann?
Yes. Thank you. I'll do this in 5 minutes. First, as to the jurisdiction, I apologize. The first time the question about jurisdiction under Guam law came up, I had not looked at the right section, and now I have. And I understand the concern, because we have a subsequent statute, which the first statute, of course, provided an expedited process for the DOE grant under ARPA. Okay, now the next one, which was enacted subsequent in time, and after the public auditor decided a case involving the first process. So that the fact that the public auditor applied the earlier statute to that case is not significant, because it was after that case was decided that the legislature enacted another provision for the expedited procedure, but that only refers to capital improvement projects and air conditioning repair. And that would seem now to occupy the space intended by the legislature where there could be expedited appeals. And that is not even limited to our projects. It's much broader. It's the capital improvement projects. But this is not a capital improvement project. Now that I understand the issue, I can see that probably the public auditor doesn't have jurisdiction over this appeal. We are probably limited to the normal appeal process. And I do note that PDS did provide directly to DOE the protest. And so if the public auditor agrees with that, then the public auditor should just decline jurisdiction. And it will go through the normal protest process. Okay, next. If the public auditor believes it has jurisdiction, then we have to ask the question, who altered the form? It was DOE that altered the form in a very significant way by taking the one blank, the one space, which is very conspicuously blank, and put a figure in there, 2,988. Now, when there is no figure in there before, the reasonable interpretation of that form, which is consistent with the requirements of the IFB, is you're going to provide a plan. The bidder is required to commit itself to a non-warranty service plan, which PDS did. But, and the plan is described in the response to the IFB, and since you're supposed to, if you can't, as Mr. Day pointed out, if you can't do it in one line, then you're supposed to add lines according to the IFB, which is exactly what he did. The most important point is the zero quantity means that cannot affect the bottom line determination of the low bidder. And so what we have here is we have three bids before alteration, before a very material alteration by GDOE. All we need to do is look at those bids and we can tell who the low bidder was, and it was PDS. No debate about that. And it was only through this alteration that that we ended up with the disqualification of PDS. And I'll say this. PDS is now committed to make the repairs at the prices it stated. And I suppose if all 2,988 required non-warranty repairs, PDS could lose on that. But that's okay. That's the way it is. We don't think that's going to happen. It's going to cost the government a whole lot less than $233,000, which the government put itself into that position. The bidders didn't even, so far as I can make out from their forms, request that amount. So this is, it's very misleading. I will submit that PDS was the one who did the best job in complying with the requirements of the IFB, which required I hesitate to even call it a modification of the form. You're directed to break things down if you can't state it in one line, which is exactly what they did. And with zero quantity, it's not supposed to affect the bid anyway. It's not prejudicial to other bidders because it's not supposed to affect it. It's just supposed to get a commitment from the bidder. This is your plan for non-warranty repairs. We want you to state what it is because we'll hold it to you. We'll hold you to it. We want to make sure you have a plan, so state it, okay? And then that's very consistent with the quantity being blank. It's not going to affect the bid. We just want the bidder. It's a checklist thing. You're going to have to state what your plan is, and we're going to hold you to that. Okay, but, you know, the irony of all of this is that Soft Choice didn't even submit the plan at all compliant, and as John Day testified, and with the additional material we provided this morning, it's very clear that their plan is not what GDOE requested. So, what can the public auditor do? What is the remedy? I don't accept that they can't get an extension. We just don't accept that every time they've asked for one, they've gotten one. But that's, even if the decision is they can't get an extension, they didn't get what they thought they were going to get in the IFB or what they requested in the IFB. They didn't get that. And the public auditor does not have jurisdiction to waive the EDGAR standards. And if you look at PDS analysis, you'll see violations of EDGAR procurement standards. It's true under Guam law that even a bid, which is or an award, which is illegal, can be ratified. We do not see any sort of an exception like that under our standards. And so it really, we don't believe it can be waived. And the bid, it just seems all the public auditor can use to say is, okay, we've now determined the low bidder in this PDS. And let the DOE deal with the U.S. DOE to tell them that you're going to save some money here. That's all that needs to be done. But if the public auditor believes that can't be done, then we suggest, because of the integrity of the Guam procurement law and process, the only other option is to terminate the award and to have this rebid if they can get an extension. And we hope they can, and every time they've asked before, they have. That's my position.
Rebecca?
Thank you. We have confirmed in our record, and though I do not offer this as testimony, I do offer it as something that we could confirm if we had to, that the AG checklist for this was signed on September 21st. So it was not after the issuance of the purchase order. It was on the day of or before. With regard to the arguments about jurisdiction, I would call the attention of the hearing officer in the OPA to 34 CFR 80.36, which we have referenced in our pleadings. And at paragraph B11, and it's 80.36 B through J, or J that applies under the high-risk status, at paragraph B11, it states that grantees and subgrantees alone will be responsible, in accordance with good administrative practice and sound business judgment, for the settlement of all contractual and administrative issues arising out of procurements. These issues include, but are not limited to, source evaluation, protests, disputes, and claims. It goes on to state that federal agencies will not substitute their judgment for that of the grantee or subgrantee unless the matter is primarily a federal concern. Paragraph B1 states that grantees and subgrantees will use their own procurement procedures which reflect applicable state and local laws and regulations, provided that the procurements conform to applicable federal law and the standards identified in this section. We submit that there is nothing in 80.36 that is in contradiction to the local law or the local procurement regulations, and they are properly applied in this case. With regard to jurisdiction, that means applying both local law 31-12 and 31-196, which put into effect the expedited protest procedures, first for the ERA-funded procurements, and second for capital improvement projects and air conditioning. These laws are not mutually exclusive. They gave it first for ERA on the consideration that the time of the ERA money, the time for expenditure, was sensitive enough to say there should be an expedited protest. And though the language of that law actually put a sunset provision at the end of last year, there was a specific line in that law that says, or until such other time as these monies, the obligation and expenditure deadlines may be extended. We have established by Mr. Pearson's testimony, those obligation deadlines were extended to this year. So that law comes into effect. The passing of 31-196 to a further spread, if you will, the expedited protest procedures to both air conditioning and CIP projects was a conscious choice by the legislature to expand the application of the expedited procedure to those two types of projects. It wasn't meant to repeal the previous one, and there has been language cited by even the hearing officer saying implied repealers should be avoided at all costs. Statutory construction requires, where you can read the two of them together, read the two of them together. Allowing it for air cons and for CIPs does not mean do not allow it for ERA. It means they all can come under this umbrella. Failure of the OPA to exercise jurisdiction in this matter, to be frank, would be flying in the face of the intent and the black letter of those laws, which was the money's on the line, let's rush this procedure. I know it's, you guys probably don't want it. It's a really fast procedure, but that's what the law provided for. What Mr. Mann refers to as the DOE alteration of the bid form is actually an allowed practice under the law of correcting bid forms where mistakes are evident. This is a textbook example of where the mistake is evident. Mr. Pito read from the regulation that says extension of unit prices is an example of a mistake that can be corrected on the bid form. DOE wanted extra coverage outside of the normal warranty that was established by Mr. Pito's testimony. We took the unit price that was provided by two of the bidders. We extended that under the allowable practice in the regulations and extended it to the number of laptops. The bid form itself says give us a price per laptop, not a variable range. Give us a price per laptop. We acknowledge that in hindsight, on our own side, there are things that could have been better written, but nothing that arises or meets the level of the error that was made by PDS, which was modification of the bid form and not just putting it on a piece of paper with their website address or typing it out in different font. It was modification of a bid form such that it was impossible to extract a per laptop unit price for the extended non-warranty coverage. If the OPA and the hearing officer should find that there were mistakes, that the testimony substantiates that there were mistakes in the bid, I call your attention to 5 GCA section 5425.1 and 5 GCA section 5452. 5425.1 refers to the expedited procurement procedures and allows the OPA to affirm a contract in consideration of the evidence before it. 5452 is an older standing section of the procurement law which allows for remedies after an award. And even if there is a finding that a contract or award was made in violation of a particular law, then as long as there's no evidence that it was done in bad faith, bad practice, fraudulently, then the OPA has the power. The agency has the power to ratify that contract. And Mr. Mann has indicated we don't know if USDOE will approve this extension. He's right, we don't know. But it's a serious gamble with $2 million. GDOE doesn't even have money to fix its roofs. Okay, that's personal testimony. I apologize, but I believe they don't have money and they put it out there that we are strapped. So what I'm pointing out is, I don't think the evidence does not support that there were mistakes that were so drastic that the disqualification of PDS was unwarranted. I think we've established by testimony it was warranted, and that the correction of the Soft Choice and Compacific bids was not only warranted, it's a specific example of the kind of correction allowed by law. But even if there is a finding that there were underlying mistakes that affected the award of this, we are asking the OPA to consider in the best interest of the territory, which is a line straight out of the statute at 5425. And the best interest of the territory, PDS has put in its pleading file this morning, teach DOE a lesson. Don't let this happen. I assure you, Mr. Pito will not forget the testimony that was elicited today, but teach us a lesson at the cost of $2 million for laptops, for teachers and students. I can't help but characterize PDS's testimony. Much of it had merit, but in the end, it really boils down to they were disqualified and they're disgruntled because they were disqualified, and I understand that. But they're asking you to gamble, quite frankly, with a significant amount of money that has to be expended, has to be fully spent by December of this year. And so we would ask you to consider, if you should find that there's been an error, you would consider ratifying and affirming the contract. Thank you.
Thank you. The public auditor will take the matter under advisement and issue a written decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. For the record, the hearing is now closed.
We appreciate everybody trying to resolve this in a very
meeting.
I'm
closed
sure
at 6:17.
The expedited protest.